This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for sticking with us here on the Morning Run on BFM 89.9. Coming up to 49 minutes past 8 a.m. on this Tuesday, December 5th, I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me are Joyce Goh and Brian Fernandez, taking a look at the local business headlines, starting with Petronas. So they have given their projections for oil prices for 2018, and for the first time, they have made public its Petronas activity outlook for 2018 to 2020. Let's go over some key points here, Joyce.
Okay, Hunt. So what they have is Petronas has projected oil price to hold at $50 to $60 levels, right? Up until recently, Petronas planned its operations with crude oil benchmarked at $45 per barrel. So while it shares a similar view with street estimates on oil price to stay above $50, Petronas has said that it's adopting a conservative, like, lower for longer approach. And interestingly, analysts agree that $100 per barrel days is now a thing of the past.
So $100 a thing of the past, that should be a good thing for Malaysian motorists now that we are on that floating fuel price mechanism, right? So we won't see like 4 ringgit to the litre for around 95 or something.
Yeah, but Petronas then, on the other hand, for the oil and gas industry itself, painted a far more somber picture, stating that its requirement for assets, for example, such as rigs, would be about half of 3 years ago. So according to Starbiz, companies that provide jack-up rigs and tender-assisted drilling rigs, for example, would include UMW Oil and Gas and Sapura Energy.
So essentially, this is a reality check for the industry, right?
Yes, yeah, Sansuri report is like a, like you said, reality check in a way, because it outlines the requirements for the companies servicing Petronas for the next 2 years until 2020, right? And this is the first time they're making this report available. This is to improve market information flow. And also, they've coming out to say that, you know, they still want to talk about consolidation. So Petronas President and Group CEO Tan Sri Wan Zulkifli Wan Arifin said that they need to reshape the Malaysian oil and gas ecosystem.
But here's the thing, that call for consolidation, that's nothing new, right? And yeah, very often,
it's not.
You know, they always talk about how here in Malaysia there are thousands, like 3,000-4,000 oil and gas companies, and you compare it with the likes of Norway, where they are just in the hundreds, right? Like I think 700 oil and gas companies over there, right? So, you know, really when it comes to gains in the consolidation, in the consolidation theme, that's been very few and far in between.
It's been quite slow, yeah. And Norway has a similar size oil and gas deposits as Malaysia.
Right.
So we compare it, it is a big chunk. We still have so many of the companies around,
I think,
right?
Here in Malaysia, recent news flow, the UMW Oil and Gas and Orkim and Icon Offshore, that didn't pan out.
But I think that's a broader industry consolidation that needs to happen also to drive out the weaker players because they just don't have cost efficiency. So one of the things that Petronas highlighted in this report is how the progress that it had made in terms of cost efficiency. And interestingly enough, the fact that it is going to continue to open greenfield projects of more than 20 in the next 3 years, exactly the same number as new fields it opened between 2014 and 2016. So they're not cutting back. They're maintaining their exploration efforts.
So there are more jobs coming online, perhaps, with this greenfield exploration. But those wanting to get in on this, they got to be a lot more cost efficient. Is that what they're saying?
I think that seems to be the... If you look at a thematic perspective, that's probably the underlying message there.
Well, this data that they're showing also, it shows it better pinpoints like promising work scope in the sector to participate in instead of avoiding the whole sector altogether. Because remember, banks, they were making impairments on a non-performing loans, right, from oil and gas sector, right? But that's when the oil price crashed in 2014. So this is kind of like outlining to financing people, everybody, basically the industry, what is happening in the industry is getting more transparent in a way.
Right, because you see what happened in Singapore, right, with Ezra and how that fed into the banks, I think the likes of UBS and DBS down there as well. I think here in Malaysia, there have been repeated efforts to try and safeguard or shore up confidence that, you know, the Malaysian financial sector, we are not too terribly exposed to the oil and gas sector, that we can weather any downside risk. But so given, Joyce, given this activity outlook from Petronas, who are the top people who stand to benefit here?
Like? Actually, Han, the key benefits would really come from, according to oil and gas analysts, more demand from topside maintenance, which will benefit contractors like Chariamin Petroleum, Dayang Enterprise, Dilum, and Petro Energy. The Edge Financial Daily also said that the key beneficiaries will also be from offshore support vessel operators who would be able to look for fresh jobs in wellhead and central platform fabricators as well. Those are guys like Malaysia Marine and Heavy Engineering Holdings, as well as Sapura Energy.
All right, certainly got to take a look at those counters where the markets open in just a few minutes. But before we do that, so going back to that projection for oil prices, mm-hmm. $50 to $60 per barrel, and that has got to have some kind of impact on Malaysia's budget numbers, right? From the fiscal side, right?
Right. Yeah. So RAM Ratings say that oil and gas revenue is projected to exceed the government's budgeted amount given its conservative assumed oil price of $52. So what RAM is saying is that Malaysia's fiscal deficit target of 2.8% of GDP under budget 2018 is achievable. But RAM has cautioned against rising government contingent liabilities. Right, Brian?
Yeah, so RAM noted that government contingent liabilities remain significant at 16.9% of GDP in the first half of 2017, which imposes a continuous risk on its fiscal position. It cautions that this ratio will in fact increase to 18.4% in 2023.
Man, if I got a ringgit for every time I came across the word contingent liability over the last few years,
we'll be quite rich.
I'd be rich. All right, moving on to some other indicators in of the Malaysian economy. So Malaysia's manufacturing PMI for November, that hit a 43-month high, crossing that expansionary mark of 50, right? So this is the Nikkei manufacturing PMI.
Yes, Han. So this is its strongest improvement since April 2014. And it hit a 52 above the neutral 50 threshold for the first time in 3 months. And overall, upturn reflected accelerated growth in both output and new orders.
Yeah, so not only that, the new export orders rose at the second fastest rate in the series history. Firms raised their payroll number, strongest pace since 2012 December. Mm-hmm. However, raw material prices and input cost inflation was sharp. So IHS market economists noted also that essentially growth momentum in Malaysia is likely to be sustained till the end of the year, and business confidence in manufacturing was the highest in 4 years.
Well, improved manufacturing activity gives more confidence to central banks to increase interest rates. We're seeing this trend across the globe, right? Like with global manufacturing expanding at the fastest pace in years last month.
All right, so keeping in mind the manufacturing sector here in Malaysia accounted for 23% of total GDP for 2016. So something to keep an eye on. Now, moving really quickly to Xiaomi. They apparently have an IPO coming up in the near term, I think, right?
Yeah, this is to be in talks with investment banks about a possible IPO, and they're seeking a valuation of at least $50 billion.
Yeah, so the last time they raised money, Joyce, was in 2014 at a $46 billion valuation. But some Xiaomi officials think that the valuation could hit $100 billion.
How can I?
I guess you got to ask the Xiaomi guys, right? Well, and, so Xiaomi, they don't just do the smartphones, right? They are involved in other segments of the tech sector as well, correct?
Well, they're also invested aggressively in retail stores, especially in markets like India, right? And now it's now in on the verge of surpassing Samsung in India, which is the world's fastest growing smartphone market, in a way, right? And yeah, and another hot business news you were talking about, Han, earlier was Bitcoin.
And look, now trading at around $11,000. So that means that so far this year, it has gained over 1,000%. And it's apparently bigger, that market cap is bigger than whole economies, right?
Yeah, so basically it's bigger than New Zealand's GDP, also Qatar, Kuwait and Hungary. It's also obviously higher than Bill Gates, Warren Buffett and Queen Elizabeth II. Bill Gates is worth $90 billion, Warren Buffett $83 billion. So even if they pool their fortunes, they wouldn't have enough money to buy all the Bitcoins in circulation.
Well, and keeping in mind, coming up today on the BBC World Service, we've got more on Bitcoin as Manuela Zaragoza speaks to Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, who thinks that Bitcoin should be banned. That's coming up after the 9:30 a.m. news. And we are coming up to the 9 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, we'll look at the opening numbers on the local bourse right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.